B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out of town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
We're both actually here today. Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports Hub, coming to you from the Town Fair Tire Studio. This beautiful spring Saturday. Hopefully you're out and about, not getting dragged around by your lady, person in your life that controls everything. Doing the trips to Pier 1. Does Pier 1 still exist?
I think it does still exist. Right, yeah, well, Pier 1 importers. Yeah,
maybe
Crate and Barrel.
Just out and about enjoying it.
This could be a home goods day.
Cleaning up the lawn, listening to us, heading to go play some golf, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, typically we would wait to talk Celtics until the Sports Hub Celtics show in about an hour, but that just feels stupid considering, you know, we're now in the playoffs. They're up 2-0 on the Brooklyn Nets. So if you do want to talk about them between now and then, we'll certainly take your calls at 617-779-0985. I did want to start with a quick thought on the NFL draft that we're now just a handful of days away from, Chris. And hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, and also stay tuned to see if I stay for the extra half hour, which I'll be holding over Jim's head the entire show.
That's right. Yeah, extra half hour today because the Bruins have the 3 o'clock start. So we'll take you up until the Duncan Bruins pregame show at 2:30.
This could be payback. So see how I feel. See if I'm generous or magnanimous today, or if I try and stick it to Jim.
The payback that Chris is still angry about is when we were in Los Angeles for the last Super Bowl. Chris still mad at the fact that I desperately tried to get him to be my plus one, to get into a very fancy place that we had no business getting into. And when I told him I couldn't, it literally was like watching when Ralph Wiggum gets his heart broken. when Lisa Simpson does not choo-choo-choos. They pause it. You can see his heart breaking in real time.
Hide?
Yep. Sorry, Chris. Got to go.
Yeah.
So I don't blame you if you want to hold
it. You know, it's not so much I'm mad that you went and I didn't go. I mean, I am mad about that, but I know you did everything to get me in. Mm-hmm. It's that we made plans and you had these alternate backup better plans all along and didn't tell me until like we literally were at the event we were at. It was literally like, I'm going to hide, tried to get you in, couldn't buy.
That's true. You're right to be mad about because
And you sent me some like, you know, I have to say, like, you know, when you were a single man, oh, I feel bad for those ladies because you sent me some suspicious texts. Like one of your texts was like, oh, I don't know, I don't feel that great. You know, I might have to leave this thing early. You know, I go back and look at the text. And I'm like, damn it, this was a setup from the jump.
Sure was. I definitely scumbagged you on that one. That was, I'm not really feeling it, man. We'll see where the night takes me. I might not make it till 10 all the while. I'm just scheming, like, how am I going to get into the fancy nightclub?
How am I going to get out of here without him knowing? You know, I might have to wash my hair at 10 o'clock, just so you know.
I got to shave my head. Yeah, I don't know, man. We can do it another night. But here was my thought on the NFL draft, because typically I love the draft, Chris. But this one, I can't remember the last time I've been just, I feel nothing for the draft.
Oh, wow.
Well, and it's the last time, so I was racking my brain. Like, when's the last time I kind of didn't care about the draft this much? And you got to go back almost 10 years, the 2013 NFL draft. And it really comes down to the lack of quarterbacks in the first round. Like, there is something about, I do believe, just because, I like the league, you know that. Like, there is something about where are these stud quarterbacks going to go? Are these guys going to be the white whale of these teams found their franchise quarterback, the most important position of all the sports? And in 2013, it was stiff after stiff at that position, and guys going way too high, the likes of, Geno Smith going to the Jets early in that second round. There was no quarterbacks. There's got to be quarterbacks going high. E.J. Manuel going way too high to the Buffalo Bills, 16 overall that year. You remember him as a Florida State fan.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that was. I was just going to throw his name out there. I was like, that's the E.J. Manuel and Christian Ponder. We've cornered the market on overdrafted quarterbacks.
You've got to have stud quarterbacks early on to have real buzz for the NFL draft. That's my feeling on this year's draft because it's early on, it's just tackles and defensive ends and D tackles and like, okay, like, sure, but I need the most important position to be prominent early on in the draft for me to really be jacked up about.
Or you need somebody who's sort of like a generational talent at the top. You know, when you have one of the Bosas, or the feeling is like, oh, okay, here's like, Orlando Pace or somebody like that. Sometimes you get these tackles or you get these defensive players who people feel are like really generational players, and you don't have that, you know. And there's not really even a clear-cut number one. Most people think it will be Aiden Hutchinson, although Trevon Walker, the kid from Georgia.
Well, look how Kayvon Thibodeau's dropped.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's dropped. You know, there's no like Jadeveon Clowney. So it's like you need that guy that builds all that buzz that people feel like is a surefire, you know, big-time player, Myles Garrett, whatever it is. You don't really have that. So not only do you not have the quarterbacks, and those are the guys that normally go number one overall, although that can backfire, just ask the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield, you don't have a clear cut like this guy's going to be in the league for the next 10 years and be a Pro Bowler type of guy.
Well, Jadeveon Clowney also comes to mind, too, because remember that clip that went viral of when he was on South Carolina, blows up that running back Michigan, the helmet goes off, like, oh, this guy's got to be a stud. Now, he's been mostly meh, I think.
I agree.
As a pro, but, you know, you want, like, buzzworthy clips and stuff like that. So, again, with, like, tackles and D-tackles and stuff like that that aren't, I don't know, at least popping off your YouTube highlight reels, there's just, for me, and I don't think I'm alone on this, just not a lot of buzz league-wide for this draft this year. There just isn't. So what I'm hoping for, and we're going to try to will into existence, because I feel like I'm partly responsible for this, pat myself on the back, because I willed the quarterback trades into existence. I was feeling down about that. We're not going to get these QB trades. And boom, within a week, you got Russell Wilson going from the Seahawks to Denver. You have Deshaun Watson going to the Browns. It's like, okay, this is what I want. I want some real excitement in this NFL offseason, and we've certainly gotten it. I want trades that night. I want to see, you know, how about another trade at quarterback? Let's see Kyler Murray go. So it feels like he's disgruntled with the Arizona Cardinals. Let's see Deebo Samuel go. It sounds like he wants to go from the San Francisco 49ers. Could the Patriots be interested there? I need buzz. I need trades. That's what will get me into the draft come Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see a lot of trades. I don't know if you'll see trades of players. Look, it's certainly possible, particularly the way the wide receiver market has gone. You know, whether it's an A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, his trade request is already out there.
Terry McLaurin.
You can never count out the Washington Commanders in terms of mismanagement of an asset. So that could all happen, and that would be fascinating, particularly because you have some teams towards the back end of that first round. And I would throw the Patriots in there. I mean, I don't think they're going to do anything, but you have teams towards the back end of that first round. In terms of Kansas City, they have the 29th pick and the 30th. Green Bay has the 22nd and the 28th. Those are teams that need to replace big-time wide receivers. So do they look at it and say, okay, you know, didn't want to pay $30 million for Tyreek Hill, Kansas City? Green Bay offered more money than Devontae Adams got from Vegas, so they're willing to pay. Do they look at it and say, instead of drafting a guy, we'll just pay for a proven guy? Give us A.J. Brown. Give us Deebo Samuel. Give us DK Metcalf. Give us Tyler Lockett. Give us Terry McLaurin. So maybe one of those teams makes a move.
I would also, you know, another reason I feel down on this is I feel like what you just mentioned, like the Patriots aren't going to do anything that's truly buzzworthy. If they did something I didn't expect, get a real weapon for Mac Jones, Jameson Williams with the bum knee that he hurt in the championship game, but it sounds like he's ahead of schedule, could be back maybe as early as October, but like that's a real weapon, a guy who was healthy. And I've seen some mocks already kind of change. There's still guys that believe that he could go in the top 10 still. Yeah. He's that talented. So if the Patriots took him, all right, boom, you got a big pop there. But you and others have now convinced me, Chris, it's going to be like an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Or they're just going to trade out of them.
I've been looking at this Rich Hill, who does excellent Patriots coverage. He has this draft chart that, you know, pretty much everybody in the media uses. And I've been looking at it since I mentioned it on Felger and Maz. And really, like, for the Patriots, I could totally see them taking 21 and a fourth to Seattle for 40 and 41 in the second round. That would give them three second round picks at 40, 41, and 54, and then they'd start manipulating the board and getting some of the picks back. You like the fourth rounder they traded. And because this isn't very much an eye of the beholder draft. And I think there is a feeling that between, say, 15 and 50, you know, the guys are basically the same. Like, it's really up to you. It's like, what flavor do you prefer? So why not take as many swings as you can in that span and see if you can connect? So I would not be shocked at all if the Patriots trade down. You know, if somebody's like, oh, we didn't think so-and-so would still be on the board at 21 and wants to jump back into the first round and the Patriots trade down, that would not shock me in the least.
I hope I'm wrong, but I'm convinced when Agenda Free Friday starts next Friday on Felder and Maslach, like, everyone's going to be pissed about what the Patriots did.
Oh, I think so.
Like, there's no doubt in my mind. But I'd love to be wrong. Again, like, take a wide receiver, make a pop, move up, do something. But again, not a lot of buzz for me personally. And I don't think I'm alone there for this year's draft. Robert Williams cleared. Is going to play tonight. Is this the smart move for the Celtics for game three?
I don't think it is, to be honest. I would give him another game. I understand, you know, why they're doing it. I think they feel like they have the Nets on the ropes. The Nets are a dangerous team still with Durant and Kyrie. These first two games really could have gone either way. They don't want to give these guys any confidence, any breathing room. I also think they know Kyrie and they feel like they get him down 3-0 and he definitely will mail it in and quit. So this is what the Celtics do. I think not only in terms of off the court and how they manage things, but on the court, this is the way they've played really since they turned it around on January 23rd. They're a team that loads up. They go for the knockout punch. They're Mike Tyson. You know, they want to knock you out in 90 seconds if they can. They don't want to go the distance. That's not the way they're built mentally. So I feel like this is part of that. They're basically saying, we're going to put Robert Williams back out there, try and win game three, and then the series is over.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, game two, I know you were in the building for it. I was too. That one, I think, might have even been more impressive than the win in game one because of how bad they were in that first half. Bad ball handling. They're falling all over themselves, especially Jaylen Brown, who was ultimately excellent in the fourth quarter, but it's like someone buttered the bottom of his sneakers. But you get a great fourth quarter from him. You get a big night from guys I wouldn't have expected, like Peyton Pritchard, who kind of felt like he was in over his head a little bit in the limited minutes he got in game one. Grant Williams was excellent, but I think the story, though, Chris, through the first couple of games is the play of Kevin Durant, the tough defense he is facing. But I also think some of it's on him, too. And maybe that's credit to the Celtics and the defense that they've gotten into his head. They've gotten under his skin. So game three tonight. And like I said, we don't have to wait until, 45 minutes from now for the Sports Intelligence Show. You want to talk about the Celtics? And you're right, too, because they're the biggest story in the city right now. 617-779-0985. Your calls on anything you want, including the draft, Patriots. Deebo Samuel, should the Patriots try to be in on him? You know, they should, but they won't because of the money. Whatever you'd like to talk about here on an extended Gasper and Mario today till 2:30. Will Chris stay? Big question of the day here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Durant has to force one. I don't think he got that away in time. Rebound ends up in the hands of Kyrie, but it looked like a shot clock violation. Instead, Durant stripped the ball clean by Jaylen Brown, and that is now the ninth turnover committed by Durant in the series. Durant, left side of the floor, starts to his right, looking for an opening, lobs it, deflected by Horford, stolen by Jaylen Brown. Another Durant turnover. Durant against Tatum. Tatum trying to hold his ground against the Durantula, who pulls up with a jumper and misses it. Durant chased by Jaylen. Jaylen strips him of the ball. Another Durant turnover. Dragic moves it to Durant against Jaylen Brown. Double team comes, kick out Dragic. Dragic with 3 seconds to turn to Durant. They're going to force him to take a crazy shot. It's short, and that'll do it for the third quarter.
Durant now could be back in this game, and this is a real critical stretch.
Kevin Durant is 4 of 12 with 5 turnovers here in game 2.
The Celtics' focus has been defensively. Isolated with Tatum right side. Durant shakes him off, and this is the long jumper. Here's Durant against Grant Williams. Grant knocks it away. Ball going to roll out of bounds off Durant. It's another Kevin Durant turnover. His sixth of game two.
Man, heartbeat, doggone steal.
Durant gets to the free throw line and shot blocked by Tatum. Here's the lob towards Durant. Turns on Jalen Brown. Throws the left shoulder into him. Durant turns, fades, tough shot. Rims out. Rebound. Pritchard. Here's Durant. Down left side. Gets to the elbow. His jumper is no good, and the Celtics have the rebound. It just has not been his night.
It hasn't been his series. The story through the first couple of games between the Celtics and Nets, the play of Kevin Durant. I've never seen him look like this. It's Casper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Yes, he is facing very tough defense, and in fact, I have some stats to back that up from behind the ESPN paywall, a pretty interesting story posted today by Kevin Pelton. But, I mean, some of these turnovers, Chris, they're straight up stupid. They really are. They're unforced. He's lost the ability to hold on to the ball. He's one-on-one against Grant Williams, flinging it out of bounds. You know, he's bouncing it off his leg, leading to a fast break. There was one, like, seven and change. This stood out to me. I was like, what is he doing? In the third quarter in game two, where he like holds the ball literally in front of Jalen Brown, like, here, would you
here,
like it?
Take this.
And he did.
I remember that one.
And so, you know, I'm not trying to like be a dick to like hesitate to like give credit for the Celtics, like, oh, they got under his skin. Like, I just think, I don't know, like, what is it? It can't just be all the Celtics defense, can it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think they've played great defense on him, no question about it. He's shooting a lot of contested shots. They're not letting him get to his spots. They've been very physical with him, and he is still sort of a frail guy. But I think it's sort of like the great quarterbacks. When we talk about, oh, look at this, Denver's pass rush, they sped up Tom Brady. He looks out of sorts. And there's a certain point where it becomes mental for these guys, and they start to make unforced errors. And that, to me, is what's happening with Durant. You know, they have made their presence known and have announced their presence with their defense. And so he's thinking about that, and that's leading to some mistakes on his end and some uncharacteristic mistakes. I also think this guy's one of the best shot makers, if not the best shot maker in the NBA.
Best mid-range shooter I've ever seen in my life.
And he's just missing some of these shots. I mean, the Celtics aren't the only team ever that's contested Kevin Durant tough twos. He's just missing, like he's just not making them. So I give the Celtics credit, but I can't give them 100% of the credit because there are shots he's just not making. And as this ESPN story points out, you know, back-to-back games for him with shooting percentages under 40% and six turnovers. That's the first time that's ever happened in his career. And he shot 0 for 10 in the second half of game two. That's the first time he had ever gone 0 for with double-digit attempts in the second half of any game. So this is really unprecedented for Durant. And I covered both of those games. And again, I would say the Celtics defense was persistent, disciplined, dogged. But some of these shots are shots he still normally makes.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, they're the type of shots he makes and other guys make. They're the type of shots, frankly, Chris Middleton has made against them where like the shot goes up and it goes in. And the crowd's like, oh, because you're like, man, Celtics guy was draped all over him. So again, it's not the first time he's had guys draped all over him. I don't know what it is. I really don't. I just think they've sped him up mentally, and he's just not in a groove. He's just not, you know, as the kids would say, this hasn't been a vibe for him.
B-Rob, Brian Robb, Mass Live, you've been there. You've been covering the Celtics. Are we wrong not to give full credit to the Celtics defense on this with Durant?
I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head with that, and I'm going to throw another theory at you. I want your guys' 2 cents
okay.
on. Is he just gassed right now?
Yeah.
From a standpoint, he's averaging 41 minutes a game in April, and then on top of that, was coming back from an MCL knee injury that left about 6 weeks. So it's like he came back from the injury and it was like foot on the gas the whole way just to even make the freaking playoffs. And now you're up against one of the toughest defenses in the NBA right now with minimal help. And like you said, you guys, like a lot of shots that he normally makes, did he just not have it? He's 33. Like there's a lot of miles on those tires right now.
It's interesting you mentioned that, B-Rob, because just being in there in person like you normally are and just watching it, to me, he doesn't have the same bounce and explosion that I'm used to seeing from Kevin Durant. Like it just feels very, like I feel like I'm watching N'Keal Harry try and run a route.
A little bit glacial.
It's just very deliberate. Like I don't feel like there are really any sudden movements, and I feel like he doesn't have any explosion. And even when he's, you know, he's getting all these shots blocked, normally he elevates over people and just lets it go. I feel like the elevation on his jump shot's not there either. So I would buy into that theory in terms of age, mileage, injury, all that stuff sort of contributing to him not playing his best or anywhere near it in these first couple of games. And then also, you know, I do give credit to the Celtics and Ime Udoka. I mean, he knows the player from USA Basketball, from being on the Nets staff, and I think he's putting him in difficult situations. And I think Ime has really coached circles around Steve Nash. I mean, I don't even know if you can call what Steve Nash is doing coaching.
Oh, you could replace him with a roll of paper towels. He's useless.
I mean, I really don't feel that what he's doing is all that different from like the fans who are sitting in the front. Like, you know, he just stands up during the game and you sit in your courtside seat. There's not really much of a difference.
I'm glad you brought him up too. So if he's a mess like this, Durant, and here's why I think you can look at him and say, like, he's either powerless or useless. Why is Durant continually the primary ball handler, especially when you have a like late in that game where Goran Dragic is, you know, killing the Celtics.
Killing him.
Like, if Durant's having a terrible game, can he go to him and say, like, okay, like, now we're going to run you off, you know, pick and rolls. We're going to, you know, try to have you seek out a defender that you can get in.
Why not run it? I mean, I don't know if they ran these, but I don't remember. I mean, why not a Dragic, Durant pick and roll with Kyrie in the corner?
And
I
don't think Nash has the respect of, like, a Greg Popovich or, like, one of these real tenured coaches that have won things to tell Kevin Durant anything. Like, he's just there as a figurehead. He's not the real head coach there. It's Durant and Kyrie.
Like, I mean, he just, you know, sort of stands there, like, arms. There were even calls. I mean, I know he challenged that one at the end, but there was like a call before that I thought he should have challenged. And his players, and I know all the players always say challenge it, but I literally was like, you got to challenge this. Like, this is the momentum's shifting. Like, you have to challenge this call. And he was just stands there, arms folded. Like, I don't know if he's trying to project the sort of placid zen calm of like a Phil Jackson, but it doesn't work. I mean, it just looks like you're along for the ride and you're not doing anything.
You mentioned the block shot, so this is where I definitely give the Celtics defense credit. And this was the holy crap wow stat for me reading this Kevin Pelton column.
I'm surprised you pay for this. You're behind the paywall.
It's like one of the only things I do pay for.
Okay.
Chris, I've had ESPN Plus or whatever it used to be called for, I think, 11 years now. It's just one of those things I forget. I probably should have canceled years ago, but I'm like, what the hell? Whatever.
Yeah, because I was like literally trying to cut and paste this to send you because I was like, there's no way Jim pays for this.
No, Jim pays for this. So okay. Pelton writes this. Durant is rarely getting to the hoop, so these blocks have come primarily on jumpers. Per second spectrum tracking, whatever the hell that is, just 2% of Durant's shots outside the paint were marked as blocked during the regular season. Just 2%. That's jumped to 9% in these two games, 3 of 34. So when Durant is on, it can feel impossible to affect his rhythm as a jump shooter. Boston's defenders, particularly Tatum, have shown otherwise. Again, you've got to give them full credit on that because they are all up in his grill. And, like, I don't remember him, like, getting shots blocked, Chris.
No,
that's what's so shocking to watch
in
these first two games.
Yeah, and it's great. And again, so that's sort of where I'm like, wow. Like, to be Rob's point, is there something physically where he doesn't have like his full lift and his full explosion, because the guy's 7 foot.
Yeah,
like how many 7-footers who jump, you know, are getting their shots blocked? It's just odd to me. It really is. It's bizarre. And so the Celtics, like I said, are doing a great job and they're making it really difficult on him, but it shouldn't be like 32% from the field difficult. It shouldn't be you basically didn't show up in either game difficult. And I know he went to the free throw line 20 times in game two, but I mean, he really, you know, was not when they needed points. I mean, this is supposed to be the whole idea of the Nets, is that when you need points, you have two guys who can go out there and get them at will. And if he'd had just one representative Kevin Durant game in the first two games, I think you're looking at a series that's 1-1.
You think this series is over? I'll tell you what, if the Celtics win.
Oh, I do.
If the Celtics win tonight, you could pretty much look at a sweep. They're going to pack this thing in. But your thoughts on this series thus far, the job the Celtics have done on Kevin Durant and Rob Williams making his return tonight, that and anything else on the table at 617-779-0985. It's Gasper and Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper. Jasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is about the Celtics defense. For the last 45 games, 50 games, the Celtics have been maybe the best defense I've ever seen. There are no weak spots to pick at. They switch everything. They don't make mistakes. And the Nets, when you give the Celtics two non-shooters away from the ball, which almost every Nets lineup has, whether it's Bruce Brown, Nick Claxton, Andre Drummond, some combination of those two, they help, they close space, they recover, they don't make mistakes, there's no place to go. The one thing I will say about KD, something's going on with his handle. Like, he's just losing the ball, he's getting sloppy with it, the Celtics are taking it away from him, he's dribbling off his foot. Some of those turnovers are like, what's going on here?
Zach Lowe on the Celtics defense for the first couple of games. Going to keep that up tonight for game three. Tip off at 7:30. Brandy and Max will have your call here from the Barclays Center on 98.5 Sports Hub beginning at 7 p.m. Let me try to find this tweet, too. Apparently, it's quite expensive on the secondary market to get into tonight's game. Yeah,
More expensive than your Hamilton tickets?
I don't know if they're that much, Chris. But Nick Wright, FS1, I know you all hate him, but he tweeted about an hour ago. I've been buying aftermarket tickets to Nets games at Barclays for 2 years now. There's never, in all caps, been a game priced like today's. Nearly 60% more than any of the games against the Bucks last year. So either the Nets finally found fans, or Barclays is about to be flooded with Celtics fans tonight. Easy trip. Easy road trip for a lot of people. So I wonder if that's what it is, because I feel like there's really, that's not a place I think that there's much of a home court advantage. Look, I think home court kind of gets a little bit overrated in the league anyway, Chris. I think what matters much, much more is who gets the referee assignment. But that's not a place I think of like, ooh, that's a lion's den and a tough place for a team to go into. So, like, I don't know. Like, I see that, and I immediately think, yeah, there's probably a lot of Celtics fans on the road going to this game tonight, and good.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see a lot of Celtics fans. I mean, the Celtics travel well in general, or have fans across the country in general. You watch these games, you see their fans there. So it should be interesting. It's in, you know, just as a quick aside, you and Nick Wright, it's kind of like a Mac Jones, Jordan Spieth thing there. You guys have similar vibe.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a turtle chin, big nose thing. Yeah.
But I didn't mean that, but
I know what you're getting
but
at,
you
Chris,
guys but do kind of look alike.
Yeah, a bit. I would certainly like his money. I know that. And I wouldn't do the...
Well, you're better on the radio and better with sports takes than he is.
Oh, well, thanks, Chris. That's I wish the money reflected that, the way that Nick Wright gets paid. I wouldn't do his... I think he's got a wearing a rug or something now. I would.
Really? I thought he got the hair replacement.
Whatever it is. Okay. That's just not for me. I'll stay bald and wear my hats. But Pat in Providence, first up here on Gasper and Murray this morning on the Celtics-Nets series thus far. Hi, Pat.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think that game three, whether you like to admit it or not, Kyrie and Durant have championship credibility. I think they win this game because they have some pride. Game four is going to be the pivotal game. If the Celtics can steal game four, which is going to be a must win for Brooklyn, they come back and they win the series in five. I think you can probably chalk tonight up as a loss because Durant and Kyrie are going to beat Durant and Kyrie. Game four is the pivotal game. If they can win game four in Brooklyn, it's over.
Yeah, I don't know, Pat, like because of the way that the last game played out, because defensively the Nets, they were game. You know, they're role players like Dragic, who is, you know, I know don't cross sports, but to me he's like, you know, remember how Jorge Posada was, you know, the Red Sox killer back in the day in the Yankees. Yeah. Like Dragic, no matter what team he's on, just kills the Celtics. But he goes off. Seth Curry goes off. Like, they threw the whole bucket at you, and you still won. Durant got the line 20 times. They were trying to get help by the refs in that one, too. I'm convinced of it. And I know the league would like to see this series go further, Chris, if you've seen what the ratings have been thus far. Like, they've
astronomical. Have they really been that good?
Oh, the first game one was the most watched game one of a first-round series in over a decade. Like, it's been insane. But if the Celtics are able to win that last game, like, I don't know. I don't think tonight's a lock for Brooklyn. I don't.
I do think, you know, Brooklyn's going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at you, though. I think they'll be they're the more desperate team, and I just can't imagine KD is going to have a third straight game like this. And if he gets cooking and Kyrie gets cooking, and normally the NBA adage is that role players play better at home. Now, again, the Nets role players have played well in these first two games. And the one thing I would say, and again, I think the Celtics are going to win the series. My original pick was six. I'm going to stick with that.
That's what I said.
Yeah, that was my original, because I just don't think that, I think the Nets, you've sort of seen it here. They have big names and a lot of star power, but they're not a good TEAM team. The pieces aren't a great fit and the coaching is terrible, and they are not a good defensive team because Durant has to conserve too much energy to be able to function on the offensive end, and Kyrie's always been a terrible defender, and the rest of the guys are not good defenders, and they're too small. They don't have enough length. They traded away some of their rim protector, and they don't really have, outside of Durant, you know, any really great wings with length. But, you know, all that being said, if you're the Nets, the positive you have to look at is that, yeah, the Celtics have been great defensively, but you've scored more than 60 points on them in the first half of each of these games.
Let's go to Cody in North Smithfield. Well, we were talking about the Patriots in the draft earlier on this hour. I wanted to mention N'Keal Harry. Hi, Cody.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm just curious, why isn't N'Keal Harry for Andy Isabella, maybe a little draft conversation, why isn't that being brought up more?
Probably because we've talked it to death already. N'Keal Harry's probably going to get cut.
Yeah, I mean, I think why would you trade? If you're the Cardinals, you know, why would you trade? Why would you give anything up for N'Keal Harry when, again, he's probably going to get cut? You maybe could have both of those guys in your camp. You don't know who's going to get hurt or who's not going to get hurt on your team. That's maybe a conversation, too, that could be had after the draft. If the Cardinals end up drafting, they drafted Rondale Moore last year. Remember now, the Cardinals lost Christian Kirk, so maybe that opens something up for Andy Isabella. But what if they get another receiver in this draft? Then maybe they say, okay, we need a bigger body guy. The other thing is that they actually found a bigger bodied sort of receiver last year, and the name's escaping me. It's a kid from Texas Tech. And I can't remember
the name. This is Arizona you're talking about.
Yeah, yes. And he's a big body receiver who actually can like go up and get the ball. He's not the greatest receiver of all time, but again, it's somebody, you know. You're looking at Cliff Kingsbury. Coach Hansom had this kid at Texas Tech. So why should they give anything up for N'Keal Harry? He might not even be better than the kid they have.
Lucas in Vermont, as we're talking wide receivers, on Debo Samuel. Next here on Gaspar Murray. Hi, Lucas.
Antoine Wesley's his name.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
So, I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, if you're going to draft a wide receiver with your first or second round pick, whether that's Mechie or someone else, I'd rather put that pick in the Debo Samuel and go from there. And I understand maybe the money might not work out, but like you could add second round pick, fourth round pick, and Aguilar to get Debo back. And I'd rather have Debo, Devontae Parker, Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne than that with Aguilar without, I don't know. I just think it would be a win-win. And
yeah,
I mean, I know San Fran's made some, you know, good trades with us in the past with Jimmy, which they kind of got us, but I think we got them on one trade. I can't remember that we seemed to win. I don't know. I just think there could be that possibility.
Yeah, Lucas, if it just comes down to this, would you be willing to give 21 up and maybe like a third rounder next year for Debo Samuel? I'm a yes on this. He mentioned the money. Let's just put the money aside because they're not going to pay that kind of crazy money to someone like Debo Samuel.
But you can't put the money aside because that's the whole point.
Like, no, to me, I know, but just like okay. I'm saying, hypothetically speaking, okay. Let's just call it 21 and a 2 or a 3 next year. Would you
sure,
do
Nick,
that?
I'll play along.
Yeah. Very good, Chris. But would you do that? Like, because I think a lot of people still want to hold on to that precious number one pick. I wouldn't.
I would do that. I mean, Debo Samuel's a game changer for you. I would do it, but it's just, again,
the sad reality is as though the money is going to be a factor in that.
Well, I just don't see the Patriots paying a wide receiver $20 million a year. I mean, philosophically, I don't think they really believe in that. I just don't. And I think they still sort of believe, and from the stuff I've heard and the way they're building this team, there's an element of, you know, when our quarterback is good, our quarterback in our system can elevate our receivers so that we don't have to pay that type of money for a game-changing receiver. You know, they probably feel like they can get Devontae Parker to perform like a $15, $16 million receiver, and they don't have to pay that type of money. Now, look, maybe it changes. You know, Bill's adapting, Bill's evolving. He always says, I do what's in the best interest of the team. He will change, but I know that his core philosophy is you build a team from the inside out, and I just have a hard time seeing him dedicating that amount of cap space to a wide receiver when the most money they've ever paid a wide receiver by AAV, average annual value, is Nelson Aguilar, and it's $11 million. So you're basically going to double that. You're going to give up a first-round pick and double that?
Yeah, no shot.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the Patriots acquiring wide receiver Devontae Parker from the Miami Dolphins, I get the feeling that Gasper over here feels like the Patriots might have pulled one over on Miami GM Chris Greer, or that Chris Greer might be in over his head. We'll get to that along with your phone calls at 617-779-0985. Coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
.org. Chris Gasper.
Oh my God.
And Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Speaking on Joe Judge, two things on that. We learned from Jabril Peppers a couple of days ago that Joe was more involved with the offense than the defense, or really special teams in New York. They had one of the worst offenses in the league that by the end of the year, even after firing Jason Garrett, was the worst. Secondly, in 2019, you mentioned that the coaching some of the receivers got from Joe Judge in his first year in that position was lackluster. They weren't a huge fan of that. Is there anything more you can add to that before we get into maybe there's a reason for optimism here?
Sure. With Joe Judge, again, I got to know him in his first go around here. And he's not a, first of all, the constant disclaimer, like him, had great conversations with him, certainly would respect his football mind, his acumen. And I'm not surprised he got a crack at a head job because of the cut of his jib. But he coached wide receivers. And during that season, I was told that there were wide receivers who were unhappy with the coaching they were getting to the point where they felt as if Joe Judge didn't know more than them. And there were blowups at practice, or at least one that I know of, in which a receiver said, "You don't know what you're talking about. Not what you're looking for."
Yeah, that's a good sign for Joe Judge. He's back. Him and Matt Patricia. The consigliere's by Bill Belichick. Ugh. I said it yesterday to Felger and Maz, Chris. Like, think about like how fan bases, certain fan bases, how enjoyable this offseason has been for them. The Denver Broncos fans. Like, oh my God, we have a real quarterback again for the first time since really Peyton Manning before the neck went sideways. We have Russell Wilson now. Colts fans can feel some hope. We have a real quarterback post Carson Wentz. Sure, it's Matt Ryan and he's on the back nine, but still, you know, he's the first real quarterback you've had since Andrew Luck. Like, things have happened here. Browns fans, if they can bury their heads in the sand. They can be excited just in terms of the play on the field from Deshaun Watson, real quarterback there. Like, there's exciting things that have happened this year. Patriots fans, it's Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. Pardon me while I go puke into a bucket. Like, it's just horrible. So I think that's a bad sign there. But talking about wide receivers, they do have Devontae Parker. As of right now, unless something happens at the draft or maybe they make another trade here, he is their de facto number one wide receiver. You had a thought on... Well, the Miami end of things and how this deal happened.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there were reports out of Miami. Chris Greer talked the other day in his pre-draft press conference, and he sort of talked about this deal, sending Devontae Parker to the Patriots, which I really haven't understood, to be honest, from the jump, because I just feel like you don't want to help a division rival at a real position of need. And I also know, you know, Brian Flores obviously was down there, and there were a lot of issues in Miami, but Chris Greer and Brian Flores did not see eye to eye, and that was a problem. And boy, can I see why, because there's a comment from Chris Greer here about this deal where they gave up a fifth-round pick this year and Devontae Parker and got a third next year. Here's what he said about that. Getting that third-round pick was very important for us, and we're fine with this year or next year. What? What are you talking about? Your team has just four picks in this draft, and the strength of this draft is supposed to be its depth. It's not great at the top. You have no picks in the first or second round. You don't have a pick until the third round at 102. After that, your other picks are 125, 224, and 247, the latter two in the seventh round. You don't care whether you get the third round pick this year or next year?
They need it this year.
You need it this year. You need it this year. And so not only did you not get the pick this year, you gave up another one of your own picks when you didn't have enough picks to do that. I mean, I think this is a total fleecing by the Patriots, especially because when Devontae Parker was in a Patriots-type system, and he spoke about this the other day, saying there were a lot of similarities to what Chad O'Shea ran down there Flores' first year, and when Parker was healthy, he was a 1,200-yard receiver. So, I mean, I know Chris Greer is from here. He's from Holliston. You know, people probably remember Bobby Greer,
sure,
who ran the Patriots. You remember Mike Greer, the hockey player who played at BU. So I don't want to bag on him too bad, but I'll just say this. He's been with the franchise since 2000. He's been the GM since 2016. What have the Dolphins really done during that time?
No, not a whole hell of a lot.
Not a whole lot. And he's ingratiated himself to several different ownership groups. The guy's a survivor, I give him that. And he's ingratiated himself to Stephen Ross. But again, you know, I heard that he and Flo had issues, and I can see why. Like, stuff like this. I mean, that's just, that is bad management. And they also said, well, we wanted to do right by the player. And I'll say, you know, I respect that because I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth because I know how NFL teams treat players. So I do respect that. And Devontae Parker wanted to go to the Patriots. But you have to get that third round pick this year. You have to, especially if you're or you don't give up the fifth. You just tell them, you tell the Patriots, okay, you don't want to give us the third until next year. That's fine. But that means we're not giving you a fifth. We'll give you a seventh. You can take 224 in the seventh round. We don't have enough picks to do this for you. They completely fleeced him. It's terrible. I mean, maybe Devontae Parker doesn't work out. I don't know. But this is not how you make a trade. You didn't get full value for the player. And to sit there and say it doesn't matter, we don't care what year we get the third round pick in. You think Mike McDaniel cares?
Oh, yes.
He cares.
Yeah, that they didn't blow Chris Greer out blows my mind because, look, he's still responsible. Or at least partly responsible for the fact that they took Tua over Justin Herbert, Chris. Like, that's an unforgivable.
Well, no, because they'd rather blame Flo for not tanking. You know, they'd rather blame Flo for not.
They were sitting at five.
For not tanking and not getting them Joe Burrow. That's the whole story down there. Flo should have, you know, Brian Flores should have tanked and we would have gotten Joe Burrow. They did try and trade up for Joe Burrow. But you're right. I mean, it's a great point. They could have had Justin Herbert.
Yeah. I mean, that alone. Is just like, that's mind blowing. But is it that he's just kind of a dunce, or is this you know, Belichick wins another one and he, you know, pulled the wool over his eyes?
I don't think he's a dunce. I mean, I think he was a very good scout, but I don't think he should be in this role. And I think this type of management from the Patriots rivals is not the whole reason, but certainly has been a contributing factor in why they were so good during the Brady era. I mean, just look at the Jets. Like, when 50% of your division is grossly mismanaged for two decades, you don't really have to do that much to be competitive and make the playoffs and be pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, and I say 50%, it's 50% of your division, but you have to pull yourself out. So now 2/3 of your competitors are completely inept and idiots. Like, how hard is it really?
Steve in Fall River on the upcoming NFL draft. Go ahead, Steve.
Good day, guys. I don't want to debate their previous drafts, the Patriots. I just want to say what I'd like to see them do and what I think you should expect from the draft. My expectations from the draft are players 1 through 45 picked in the draft. You have to expect that that's going to be a very good player. It's going to even be maybe a great player. So at 21, we need a great player. I don't want an offensive lineman. You can get guards anywhere. See Shaq Mason, see Joe Thuney. Go back in Patriots history, Stephen Neal, not even drafted. We don't need to spend the 21st pick there.
Steve, what if it was a left tackle, though? Because there's some prognosis.
I don't see Matt Light. For God's sakes, they won a Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl. Look who their left tackle was. It wasn't the 17th pick in the draft that went to the New York Giants. That guy. Waste of time. You need an impact pick.
Yeah.
Nate Solder. You don't need Nate Solder. You don't need Tony Boselli. You don't need these guys. And especially in today's game, you need impact players.
Steve, I'm going to let you go on that because I agree with you 100%. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals are proof of that last year where they had a literal sieve at offensive line. And Joe Burrow is getting sacked as many times, if not more. Did he end up getting sacked more than David Carr? They had to have because of the extra game that they added. Ooh, I know it was like 1-1, but you add a stud wide receiver in Ja'Marr Chase, and it kind of doesn't matter. Like, the game has changed so much now. Yeah, you still got to try to protect your quarterback, but if you can string it together enough, like, again, the Bengals last year, he was on his back time and again.
How many times do you get killed by the Tennessee Titans in the game that they won in the divisional round?
It's true. Yeah.
As long as you have stud wide receivers and enough talent, like, that's what matters more. I'm with them. Like, that's why I would hate this, and people would be right to piss come Thursday night when they either trade back or you get some stiff offensive lineman. You're like, what? Why? What are we doing this for?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the Patriots do it a certain way. I mean, I know we got to go to the Sports Hub Celtics show here, but we can hit on this later, you know, in the program. You know, Bedard and I sort of are having a philosophical disagreement. He very much takes umbrage with me pointing out the Ja'Marr Chase addition to the Bengals making a big difference for Joe Burrow. I think he sort of feels like Joe Burrow would have done it on his own. And I just disagree, you know, but he uses that Tennessee game as an example, saying he was under siege. You know, I look at that game and say that Chase caught five of his six passes for 100-something yards and set up two scores. So,
all right, well, let's get to the headlines, and then we'll get back to the Celtics and ahead of tonight's big game three, Celtics-Nets at the Barclays Center with tip-off at 7:30, along with your phone calls at 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.